Hi there, Jonathan here. The following talk is offered freely to ensure that no one is ever denied access to these practices and to these teachings. If you feel inspired to make a donation to support this offering, you can go to my website where you can also sign up for a monthly newsletter designed to support you in your practice. That's at www.jonathanfaust.com. Thank you and enjoy. One of my favorite quotes, it's two lines from E.B. White. He says, "I wake up each morning torn between a desire to serve the world and to savor it. And this makes it difficult to plan the day. I love that line. Because in essence, that's really what it's all about. It's about serving and savoring. It's actually kind of a little bumper sticker motto that is an important part of my marriage vows, to serve and to savor. And this morning, I've been away for the month and got back and got out on the river, and it was completely fogged in. It was really beautiful. One of my favorite things is to paddle out with like, you know, 2 feet of visibility and try and find my way back again. But the fog started burning off with the morning light. It was just absolutely spectacular. And I was really blissed out. And when I got back, I loaded up my board and my car and started up and just sort of absentmindedly hit the radio for NPR, and immediately heard about the massacre in Las Vegas. And I was really struck by the contrast of feeling such bliss and then feeling such shock and just feeling for an unimaginable sense of chaos for what everyone was experiencing. And certainly, you know, my prayers go out to all that are suffering. And it really speaks to something that the Buddha spoke of: as you become more awake in your life, as you become more awake to the 10,000 joys and the 10,000 sorrows, that you increase your capacity to feel, which is sometimes bad news, sometimes good news. So for all of us to hold this in our hearts is such a challenge. And thank you for this beautiful, beautiful reading that Bill gave me on the way in. Something from Fred Rogers. He said, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.' And to this day, especially in times of disaster, I remember my mother's words, and I am always comforted by realizing that there are still so many helpers, so many caring people in the world." And one of the interviews that I heard actually on my way down tonight was from someone who's right in the middle of it. And he spoke of just the selflessness of so many people with the instantaneous response to suffering, of people just giving of themselves to help others. And that certainly warms my heart as well. So we can choose to savor this life, we can choose to serve, and hopefully we find a balance between the two. And as we become more awake, we really do increase our capacity to feel joy, to feel compassion, to feel kindness, to feel a steadiness no matter what's happening externally. And those are described as the immeasurable states. We increase our capacity for joy. And we also increase our capacity to sustain sorrow. Tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about three fundamental ways that you can train your awareness. It's like the aperture in a camera, from narrow to mid to sort of wide. This is sort of a classic talk, which I know I've given before, but I find myself coming back to these basic practices so many times in my own life. So I'd like to talk a little bit about focus and concentration and what it can do for you, what you can get out of it, its effect on your mind, and to talk about flow, what it means to move into the flow state where you're observing change. And this third quality that we could call letting go, really it's the practice of surrender. And to talk a little bit about how you can choose, sometimes, how you pay attention. So this last month I was on Cape Cod doing a writing retreat, and Hurricane Jose came brushing by. And we went to the ocean side at the height of it. It was relatively mild, but 65-mile-an-hour winds. And we kind of made our way to the ocean side. It was literally being sandblasted. You know, I had shorts on, and it was really quite painful. It really sensitized me to, at 65-mile-an-hour winds, there were people who were experiencing twice that. It was just a little taste of how frightening that must have been for so many people. But I'd like to talk about these three stages, sort of using all we can use is metaphors. But one of the things I love to do is to do long-distance swimming. So I did a lot of swimming in the Atlantic. And after Hurricane Jose, all the warm water from the bay got sort of sucked out in the ocean, and all the Arctic water came in. And I'm married to a woman who is fixated on swimming. And I probably wouldn't have gone out, but to be honest, she really did. And to be really honest, I wasn't going to let a girl intimidate me, so I went too. So particularly the day after the water changed, it was cold and it was really, really choppy water. It was one of those sort of like don't die situations, you know. And when I got in the water, I almost laughed. It was so cold, you know, just so Arctic. Just putting my face in that water was really painful almost. And Tara and I talked about how we both kind of went into self-preservation mode. You know, okay, how cold is too cold? You know, like, what are the signs of hypothermia I should be looking for that are telling me to get out? And so I was really, really concentrated on not dying. But I was counting my breath. I was, you know, scanning my body. I was watching every stroke really, really carefully, sort of really monitoring every detail as I was swimming. And I realized that because I was so hyper aware of everything, that I was getting into a very deep meditative state of concentration. And I found myself kind of moving into a flow state, which I'll talk about in a few moments. Do you know those moments when you are just intensely present? When you're just riveted in kind of moment-to-moment awareness. Sometimes it's when you're caught in a really good movie or a really good book. Sometimes it's a moment of like really deep connection or intimacy, a moment of bliss. Sometimes a moment of fear. You know, when people describe a car accident, they remember every single detail. It's concentration is sort of what pulls you into that now experience. And this is a way we can train our mind. We're sort of organically called into it from time to time, but it's a very practical form of training your attention. Moment to moment to moment to moment attention. So I'd like to offer just a short little practice just to try this on. So if you like, you can close your eyes. This will be just for 90 seconds. And for this practice, I'd like to invite you to open your attention to sound. And I'm going to give the instructions, and then we'll have a period of silence. Your instruction is to notice every sound you can identify, moment to moment to moment. Now release the practice and just feel, is there any particular effect? Can you feel an imprint of sustained focus? And if you like, you can open your eyes or feel free to remain with them closed. In my training in yoga, someone asked a teacher, well, what is concentration? And the teacher said, imagine that you have an urn of hot burning oil filled to the very brim, and you're balancing it on your head, and you're walking through the marketplace. And if one little bit drops, it'll burn your skin. That's concentration. There are meditation techniques that can help you in concentration. And there are systems from concentration that are really, really quite powerful. In some forms of practice, you narrow your attention. You know, oftentimes when we practice a sort of a general sense of the breath at the nostrils or the belly or a general sense of the breath. In some trainings I've done, you know, the first day you focus on the breath at the nostrils. And then the next day, you focus on the breath at the very rim of the nostrils. And the next day, your anchor is to experience the breath outside your body. Not to feel it inside, but to feel it outside, which means that little patch of skin just below your nostrils. And you might just close your eyes and try that for a moment. Is it possible to feel that subtle brush of air outside the nostrils? And can you imagine doing that for a couple weeks? This is part of the practice of now. Now, there are a number of things that occur when you practice concentration. At first, it is very, very difficult. I've certainly found that as I've gone on to extended retreats, it's almost impossible to sustain attention. But the training of the mind. And after a while, it's actually possible to have more and more periods of a present moment experience. And one of the byproducts is that it's very calming to the mind. You get very, very calm. You begin to see a little more clearly. You know, the sediment of the mind begins to settle down toward the bottom. there's a lot of practical benefit to concentration as well. When the mind is focused, it can do really, really great things. There's a technique which I've shared before, but it's one I've relied on a lot during the course of my month of writing. And I just heard a story of someone who was saying that his son was really struggling with homework, just hated doing his work. And so he said to his son, try this technique, and let's just see what happens. And so what you do in this technique is you set a timer for 25 minutes. And for those 25 minutes, you do nothing but the task that you have decided on. At the end of 25 minutes, you take a forced 5-minute break. And then you do another one. And his son was really not wanting to do it, but they figured out some treat he could do at the end, you know, listen to some music or something like that. And to his son's surprise, he got all of his work done in that 25 minutes. And it is an extraordinary technique. It was first created by a med student in Italy. And it's called the Pomodoro technique. And he had a timer, a kitchen timer, in the shape of a tomato, which is why it's called the Pomodoro. And he noticed that if he used this, it really allowed him to really concentrate and then take a forced break. And this is a technique I have found very, very helpful because I'm just naturally distracted. I just notice the more I'm aware of the web, the less concentrated I am. So that technique can be really, really powerful. And you might want to try it. I also have a newsletter coming out this week. I also use some soundtracks as a way to kind of help me focus as well. I'll share that with you later. But concentration leads to flow. When you can get concentrated, it'll begin to put you into a flow state. So concentration is an element of discipline. It's a willful practice. So any tool we can use to kind of help us focus can be very, very helpful. I'd just like to mention here as well that the practice which some of us have done in the past of 30 days of practice of one observation and one restraint, I'm inspired to dive into it. So I'm going to send out tomorrow some information if you'd like to take part in it. And in essence, you choose a 30-day period. You choose one thing you're going to do, one practice every day, and one thing you're not going to do. And you do that for 30 days. And it's very helpful to assess, well, where are you leaking energy? Is there some practice you could do that might stop that? And what gives you energy? Is there some practice you might take on? So I've noticed that I easily get slide into distraction through the web, through YouTube, through all that stuff. So my restraint for the next 30 days is I check the headlines once. I check social media once. I'm not saying how long. And then the rest of the day, no YouTube, no social media, no extraneous web browsing. And then my practice is to do 2 of those Pomodoros on my book every day, no matter what. So just those little things can really, really make a difference. And I got through today. So I feel great. So do check it out. I'll send an email out tomorrow. You can download a 30-day calendar, and it's really helpful to have an ally, someone who can hold you accountable and shame you into doing it. So that can really help develop concentration. So when I get into a focused state of work, I'm stunned at how much I can do. When I'm in that flow state of concentration, I can get 5 times more done than I would if I'm just sort of hopping around unfocused. So concentration and focus is really, really powerful. But it has its limits. and a real life example of that. When I went out of the river, I wasn't really aware of the timing, so I got out there really early, like way before sunrise. And when I came back, the sun was just coming up, and there was a guy there with a brand new boat, and I could tell it was brand new, almost had its stickers on it. And he was casting, you know, toward the bank with his back toward me. And he was really concentrated on like laying the fly right in where he wanted it. He was so concentrated that I paddled right behind him, like 5 feet right behind him, and he never noticed me. He was focused, but he wasn't necessarily aware. He wasn't aware of his surroundings. And you could say he wasn't mindful. And so this kind of leads to an exploration of developing this capacity for mindfulness or non-judging awareness. So back to the Atlantic, when I was swimming, doing this mile swim, once I kind of warmed up and I realized I wasn't going to die, I started kind of dropping into the flow. I started to move from sort of like fear and anxiety to sort of noticing what was happening. And suddenly I was aware of like the bubbles as I was breathing. I was aware of kind of the contrast of the cold water on my face to the slightly warmer when I came up to breathe. There were occasional warm spots that I would swim through that I could kind of feel my body moving through those. There were a lot of gulls that were kind of around or kind of semi-amused by whatever I was doing. So I'd sort of see them through one eye and then on one side and on the other. And my body started to feel like a machine. And I was just kept noticing more and more details. And the swim started to become kind of effortless. It was all kind of happening by itself. So we move from concentration, this sort of one-pointed awareness where sometimes your awareness will sort of naturally begin to widen and open and expand. So once you've arrived, you can start to look around and notice everything that's happening. So another 90-second practice, if you like. You can close your eyes once again. You might just feel the breath and take a moment to sense what might relax. And then again, if you like, open your attention to sound. Again, notice every sound you can identify, the ones that are the closest, the ones that are the furthest away. And notice also, if you can, how the sounds are changing. Can you sense the flow of sound, the arising, the sustaining, the falling away? And then again, as you're ready, you can deepen your breath. And if you like, you can let your eyes open. So there's this sense of being concentrated in moment-to-moment attention, but there's also the perception of flow of the stream. And we've all experienced the flow state at different times. The famous book, Flow, by Mahali Csikszentmihalyi, if I said that correctly. He talked about the components of what it's like to be in the flow state. In the flow state, you are focused and concentrated. But there's also a sense of being kind of outside of everyday reality. There's a sense of no worries and a sense of a kind of expanding beyond the ego or the self. A sense of being focused on the present, but also a sense of timelessness, a sense of space. And a sense of how the moment is kind of a reward unto itself. It's just happening all by itself. Getting into the flow state can be really blissful. And we can experience the flow state anywhere at any time. It can be any activity. It can be being in nature. It can be in a moment of intimacy. It can be working really diligently at a task. It can be making art. It can be meditating sometimes. There's a sense of kind of just sort of arriving. You're intimately present, and at the same time, it's all changing. It's all happening by itself. Oftentimes, in meditation, particularly on a retreat where you can develop more concentration, you'll find yourself moving from one point of attention of sort of like sensing that sense of flow of change. As I often say, you know, the Tibetans describe it as standing under a waterfall. Just the cascade of thoughts, sensations, just the flow of life is coming through, and you're the witness, the observer of it all. But sometimes, even though we can be the observer of what's changing, there can be a sense that there's still someone in there who's watching. And paying attention to that, to the one who's observing, can be really interesting. And that sort of opens up an inquiry into this third state, the state of letting go, or the state of surrender. So after I swam, it was a little over a mile. I got out of the water. It was cold and windy, and I kind of wrapped up in a towel, and I just sat on the sand, and I relaxed. And I had a lot of endorphins, you know, from the swim. And the flow state was there. You know, there were gulls squabbling over fish. There was kind of the setting sun. There was the sound of the wind. But I found the more I relaxed, the more the sense of me began to drop away. And I could just sort of notice how everything seemed to be happening by itself. Didn't require any direction from me at all. And there was a sense of radiating happiness that I could feel. It was a little taste of something that the Tibetans, as the Tibetans describe, well, what is reality? And they use three words, or some of them do. Everyone uses different words, but... is empty, cognizant compassion. So in those moments, there was a sense of emptiness. Like there was an experience that it's all happening without me doing anything. There was cognizance. I was aware of the smells and the light and just the feeling of being present. And there was a quality of compassion. There was a real heartfelt sense of contentment. Just a sense of not desiring anything other than what was there, and a sense of goodwill. So in meditation, much of the practice is about doing. You choose an anchor, whatever it may be. You notice when the mind has wandered. You kind of willfully guide it back. As you explore kind of the flow state where you're the witness, there's still that sense of it's not quite as tight focusing on the anchor, you know, because you'll widen and notice change and how you're relating to your experience. And then sometimes you'll drift away, then you come back and you begin again. In the surrender form of practice, I find it personally to be a very powerful muscle. It's the muscle of being. It's the muscle of not manipulating your experience. We are so accustomed to doing in our lives. And yet, many of our most cherished experiences are moments of being, where you're simply present and receiving the moment as it is. So, another 90-second practice, if you like. So if you like, again, you can close your eyes and feel the breath. And you might, again, just notice the sounds. I find the sound as an anchor to be a very powerful tool sometimes. You'll recognize, if you focus on sounds, that they're deeply impersonal. They're completely beyond your control. They're constantly changing. So for the next little while, you might explore what it's like to simply let it be. If you'd like to explore a question that helps to point toward this quality of no self, you might explore the following question. What is it that is hearing right now? Can you locate that? What would happen if you just let your moment be? And if you like, again, you can deepen your breath. And if you'd like, you can let your eyes open. This particular form of practice can be quite challenging at times. The mind wants to have a job. And when you give the mind the job to not manipulate anything, it's a little maddening. But the more you explore this, the more sometimes you can begin to see how your life is really a series of connected thoughts that keep this narrative going, sort of the self-talk that helps to reinforce the story of who you are and what you're doing. In Dzogchen, in the Buddhist tradition, which is sort of it's a non-doing form of practice, they say that a thought arises from emptiness, and you notice it as a thought, and you add nothing to it, but you resonate with the emptiness. What happens for us is a thought arises and we think it's important and we add meaning to it. And then we create what they call a chain of delusion. And so the practice, the teaching is whatever arises, neither indulge nor deny. It's a lifetime practice, but it can lead to a deep sense of spaciousness, a deep sense of freedom. So this practice of letting go or surrender meditation can seem quite esoteric, but again, it's a natural state. We've all experienced that state of just simply letting it be. And having some time by the ocean, I'm always amazed at how many people flock to the ocean so they can sit there like this. There's something about looking at that horizon, being in relationship with something so big and so vast that is so kind of inherently, intuitively healing and balancing for us. So it's a natural movement of the mind. So in your practice and in your life, you can develop laser focus. You can get concentrated and very, very present and very, very clear. You can learn how to focus and concentrate and get a lot of stuff done. You can also develop your attention to be the observer, just to be the witness of everything that is changing. To notice what's happening, to notice how you're holding it, your relationship to it, can bring in a tremendous sense of freedom, a tremendous sense of ease, and a tremendous sense of wisdom. Because you'll see more clearly from that distant place. Can also open you to greater compassion. And you can also train yourself to just drop everything and let it be. They all have exquisite qualities that can support you in your life in very, very skillful ways. So when I learned meditation, I was 15, and I learned transcendental meditation, which is mantra, kind of a form of concentration practice. And I practiced that very, very diligently for about 15 years. And for about 10 of those years, I had no idea there was any other form of meditation. I just thought, well, this is meditation. And then after I moved into an ashram and I got to study with different teachers from all over the world, I realized, oh my gosh, there are so many ways that you can train your awareness. I always like to quote Jason Siff, who wrote the book Unlearning Meditation, when he said, you can get trained in any technique and find another technique that will give you exactly the opposite instructions. And it's pretty true. I have found in my own practice just tremendous benefit from practicing mantra as a technique for calming my mind, for really soothing my nervous system. From years of devotional practice, a way of developing my heart, exploring surrender. From my years of yoga, learning about energy and awareness and the witness and how energy and awareness are this dance that can be quite transformative. From Vipassana meditation, of really learning how to see clearly into these qualities of reality. From Dzogchen, how to train myself to rest in open awareness. There's so many systems. And ultimately, and I think the punchline here tonight in our final minutes, is I really believe that it all comes down to what has been called the pathless path. It all comes down to one question. Well, it's really two questions. What is happening right now? And how does this moment want you to be with it? How can you skillfully respond to this moment? That's your path right there. And the more you practice and explore different techniques, you'll realize that there are different skill sets that you can develop on how to cultivate greater wisdom and greater compassion in your life. What is this moment? How does this moment want you to be with it? I also find, and maybe you have as well, that there is some innate intuitive function that is guiding you. I've noticed there are times in my life where I'll think, you know, I'm too scattered. I gotta get it together and get focused. Or times when I think, you know, I'm too wound up. I gotta find a way to relax. And you may find, you know, I'm feeling kind of lost. I really need to learn how to meditate. And this particular form of meditation may appeal to you for a while and develop some capacity. Or another might be attractive. And I encourage you to follow that urge. The shadow side of that is you can become sort of a little bit of a spiritual shopper. You know, if something gets unpleasant, find another practice. But on the other hand, it's very important to find the practices that really work and resonate for you. So, thank you for your kind attention. I hope this is helpful. And again, if there's any way I can be of support for you in your practice, please do let me know. Just to know that focus, flow, and let go can be really helpful things to keep in the back of your mind.